Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for April 24th, 2018. The time right now is 7:02 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Hanford, Rasmussen, Davis, and Kincaid.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble is to lead us in the pledge this evening. I've asked him and he's agreed. Chief, this is your last meeting, I think. Will you please lead us in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Chief. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is a public hearing. This is AB 18-102, ordinance number 012-2018, East Monroe Interim Zoning Extension, first and final reading. Ms. Westall.
Good evening, it's Kim, Councilmember Mayor Thomas. This evening, a public hearing will be held to accept public testimony regarding extending the interim zoning designation for the East Monroe area. The interim zoning designation is limited open space and that would continue. As stated in the agenda bill, the Growth Management Hearings Board issued an order finding continuing non-compliance on April 1st, 2016. And then this was recently reaffirmed by the Washington State Court of Appeals. They issued an opinion on March 12th of this year, rejecting Heritage Baptist's arguments to the original order finding non-compliance. So this extension of the interim zoning would actually give staff time to bring the city into compliance with the court's decision. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions or a motion? I'm sorry. Are there any questions? Council members, are there any questions? Okay, we're going to go ahead and open up the public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to come forward this evening to give public testimony on this proposed ordinance? Anybody at all? Okay, seeing none, we will go ahead and Council Member Hanford.
I move to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 0. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to close the public hearing.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to close the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to waive council rules of procedure requiring two reads of ordinances.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to waive the council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinances. Any discussion on the matter? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. Councilmember Gamble.
Move to adopt ordinance number 012-2018, extending for an additional 6-month period the interim zoning original adopted under ordinance number 003-2016, successfully extended under ordinance number 016-2016, ordinance number 007-2017, and ordinance number 023-2017, formally expressing the City Council's acknowledgement and intent regarding the continued designation of the East Monroe area as limited open space following the Growth Management Hearings Board decision in Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearings Board case number 14-30006C, adopting findings providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Gamble. I have a second from Councilmember Scarborough for requested action D in agenda bill number 18-102. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Ms. Russell.
Thank you.
We're now moving into announcements and presentations. Our first item tonight is a recognition of service and retirement for our Police Chief, Tim Quinzer. Chief Quinzer, will you please approach the podium? We have this evening a key to the city that I am honored to present to you. Go ahead and, council members, you have any, would you like to say anything? This would be a good time to do that. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Chief, your service is very much appreciated. You've been there for me personally, and challenges that my family had to overcome, and so I appreciate that very much. It's going to be hard to replace you, and my father's out of town at a conference, but if he were here, he would also echo the same comments, and he's probably already told you his great appreciation, so
thank you.
You mean a lot to the Hanford family, extended family. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
I am going to miss you. I'm going to miss bartering over Husky and dogs during meetings. Appreciate your service very much. I appreciate you and the department with the handling of my family with my mother, and just the way that all of you handled that with just professionalism, and just how you treated me and my father was fantastic. And I can't thank you enough. And some might not know either that the chief, along with my kids and my wife, those that talked to me, and running again this last time around. So I'm going to miss you. Appreciate your service, and I'm excited for you. And Louisiana doesn't know what's coming.
Thank you.
I was going to say, We should have had this entrance for you every meeting.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Chief, thank you for everything. I think probably one of the council members with the least time under my belt working with you, but it's been fantastic, and just being able to work with the department is a true reflection on you and your leadership, and it's in a great spot right now, and that's thanks to you, so thank you for everything.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Thank you. Welcome in Dubai. Been great working with you when I was in the school district and here on the council. It's been fun, and I highly recommend the retirement. Enjoy it. And if you find something else to do, remember to retire young and retire often.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, I have the highest level of respect for the department, the police department here in Monroe, and appreciation also. And I think the underpinnings of that come from the fact that they've had a strong, respectable leader. And I appreciate that, and thank you very much for that. We will miss you. I'll miss you. I've appreciated working the last 6 years with you there. And good luck to you, and I hope you enjoy your retirement. So,
Chief, I really appreciated working with you. I first began service with you when I was a council member, and I know that you have counseled, supported three mayors, numerous people through council. I know that I, as a council member, and Mayor Walzer valued you serving as our city administrator for a period of time. You've done far more here than just serve as a police chief. You've touched many people's lives in a positive way. And you've helped our community grow from probably 14,000 when you started to the 18,350 that we're at today. Your leadership speaks volumes for how our community has developed over time. And on behalf of the two mayors that came before me, and on behalf of our community, I sincerely thank you for your service. And I wish you the best and blessings and peace in your retirement. I really hope that you enjoy your new place, and you will be missed.
Thank you.
Thank you. And unless you'd like to say anything, I have something to present to you, sir.
First of all, I'd like to introduce my my son Jackson and his girlfriend Megan in the back row there. Hi, Jean. And I have my family's extended throughout the United States right now. My wife would be here, but she's already in Louisiana having a good time. So,
gotta hurry up.
What?
Gotta hurry up. Get there.
I've been there and back, and we have about three more trips to go. So. But anyway, I want to say a few words here. First of all, those of you who have been in the council for quite a while know that whenever I'm talking, I always refer to we rather than I. And that's because it's all about the department, it's not about me. Well, tonight I'm going to kind of try to make it about me. So, since 2002, I've had a lot of fun times here. Very few not so fun times, I might add. I've worked with some great councils and mayors who some people say gave me nearly everything I asked for. Which is not true. But anyway, I very much value the relationship I've had with the council members and each mayor that I've been able to work with. And I'll keep it short here. In the last 46 years of law enforcement, I've had several honors. But my greatest honor and privilege is that be the Mayor Chief of Police of Monroe. Great people.
Hey, if I may, Jane, Sherry, would you please come up here? Chief, on behalf of the entire police department, I know that I echo for Chief Harris. You've been a great leader and a great friend for many years, and this is just a small token of our appreciation for everything you've done for the city and the police department. Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you.
So you can leave the meeting if you like.
No.
You can leave. You should. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't. Thank you.
So we did have cake for everybody that's here for this celebration. That includes Target and Coca-Cola.
We're going to get out. As long as that's for thank you, everybody. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda. Do you like that? Agenda. And before I go further, I did receive a phone call from Councilmember Cutterback this evening. She indicated she'd be here about 7:45. She has some commitments with her kids. And then Councilmember Camp?
I heard from Councilmember Camp by email late in the afternoon that he would also not be able to attend today.
Okay, so without objection, we'll go ahead and consider them as excused absences. And we will announce for the record when Councilmember Cutterback comes in. The next item on the agenda then is under announcements and presentations. This is presentation number 2, Monroe Chamber of Commerce Quarterly Report. Yvonne.
Hi, good evening. My name is Yvonne, and I'm the Executive Director for the Monroe Chamber of Commerce. And today, I just wanted to give you a quick overview of quarter one for 2018 and just kind of give a reference to, so you guys have a one page, it's a first quarter report, and on the back is the Commission Management and Organization Financial Report. I have 3 pages, so it's my cheat sheet. So 2017 closed pretty well. We had a lot of fun. We learned a lot. We also started interviewing and taking in for applications for our operations manager. And at the beginning of 2018, we hired a new operations manager. Many of you have had the opportunity to meet her. Her name is Janelle Drews. And she is she's really smart. She's really enthusiastic. And I'm very excited to have her on board. And she is the one that will be running the Visitor Information Center. She spends 95% of her time in that office. She does go out and meet with new businesses as well, but most of her time is spent in that office taking calls, answering emails, greeting visitors. And we have been getting, of course, now that the summer's come in and spring is here and events are starting to pick up, the visitor center is getting busier. And we together have also started to push social media a lot harder, and so we are getting a lot more reach and a lot more interaction with people about what we have in Monroe, what we're doing in Monroe, what kind of events we're doing. We are pushing events a lot harder on Facebook as well, and we are actively searching for events that our businesses have going on. And we have also started working with the city and doing a Marketing Monroe meeting every other month. And that has helped us a lot as well. We created a spreadsheet to show all the events that we have coming up throughout the year. And so that helps us. That's our cheat sheet to see how we should be helping with the hotels and helping with the Downtown Monroe Association, how the businesses themselves could use some help marketing their events. And so with Janelle on board and being very social media, and she's really good with computers and online, and so that's been a great, she's been a tremendous asset to our chamber. Q1, we also spent some time talking and starting to organize meetings for the Fair Days Parade, Music in the Park. We're also working with the Boys and Girls Club, the Lions Club, and the Senior Center on a Family Derby Day, which is something kind of new to us. And so that will be June 2nd, and that's pretty exciting. It's kind of an all-ages dirt race car Pinewood Derby. And the hope is that we just kind of will bring the community again together. We also did the Chili Bowl with the Monroe Boys and Girls Club and the Senior Center, and we also raised our food for the food bank. And so those kind of events are great for our community. It kind of shows the businesses what we have, what's going on. And then I love doing them because it shows the community, a personal side to the business owner or the business leader or the community leader. And so it's a good way for our people to also be able to meet them and see them on a different side. And then because we were raising money for the food bank or for the Boys and Girls Club and the Chamber and the Senior Center, it kind of adds a little heart to the event as well. And so it was a lot of fun, definitely a lot busier this year than it was last year. And of course, we expect it to be even busier next year. So the Chili Bowl was a great community event. We also just did the community awards. And so I just brought copies of our community awards brochure or program. And if I may, I just wanted to tell everybody who won, in case you weren't there. So our Business Excellence Award for the Chamber was Sam's Cats and Dogs. Our Community Caring Award went out to Kids Country Learning Center. Entrepreneurial Spirit Award was Original Pilot House. Outstanding Customer Service was PharmaSave. Community Improvement Award, Parks and Rec, City of Monroe. New Business of the Year Award, Warner Paddles. Walt Volunteer of the Year, Kathleen Sather, and she owns a spa and it's a home-based business. Chamber Member of the Year was Evergreen Speedway, and the President's Award, although it says on your program, it doesn't say it, was Katie Woods. And so she got announced at the event, and she also gets to be our 2018 Monroe Fair Days Grand Marshal. And so that and the parade will be August 25th. And then on the back, there's also a list of all the other organizations that also gave out awards. And then on Facebook, we've posted all their pictures as well. And Brad Albert was the one that took our pictures for us. So that was really nice that we had a photographer on site as well. So it was really cool. And Original Pilot House did our coffee service. Walmart was gracious enough to give us our sandwiches and desserts. So they hooked it up this year too. And then we host, Monroe High School hosted the event. So it was a lot of fun, and if you've never been, it would be a great event to go to. We are definitely going to be pushing it harder, especially to new businesses, to come out and start going to this kind of event, even if they don't have an award to give out. I think it shows also what our leadership is doing. It shows how much heart we really have in Monroe and how strong our community is here, and that we are not afraid to brag about our volunteers and our staff and our employees. And so this event is definitely one of those events that truly shows the positive contributions that as businesses and as community we're doing together to grow us stronger. So community awards, and then in Q2 we are working towards putting together, or we're working on the music in the park for Fridays, and our goal is to market and show off Monroe every Friday in the summer. We've also connected with Last Leaf Productions to do a presentation or plays at the park two Fridays out of June. And so, but it's because Tri Monroe is one of the Fridays, and so they won't be able to do it that Friday. But two Fridays in June, we have the four Fridays in July, our music in the park, and the four Fridays in August, our movies in the park, or under the moon. And so, we're definitely pushing Tri Monroe. You don't have to go anywhere. We're amazing. So, and that's our goal for Fridays in the summer. The other thing that is kind of new for us is we're doing our farmers market, and we are trying to work on it. We thought we had a venue, but they might have rented it out to somebody, and so we might have lost some parking, but we're working on it, and so we'll have confirmation in the next couple of days, but we already have a plan B, so we're okay. And so we're going to do 3 days in the summer, and it's just going to be once a month, June, July, and August, and it's just to kind of make sure that we still are showing off some of our local produce and some of our local vendors, and then maybe next year once the venue that we really want will be there full time, then we can move it to maybe two or three times a month next summer. And so we're working on farmers market. We also are in talks about doing a Father's Day parade, which we're hoping will be a great tourist type event. It's with Monroe Fireplace, and they're doing their grill fest, and then we're going to be hosting the beer garden, which again will show off some of our local craft beverages. And then we're also talking, or starting to organize our Corks and Kittens event, which was pretty huge last year. We brought in about 500 people, and it wasn't just from Monroe. We brought them in from everywhere. And so that's another great opportunity to bring in visitors to the city. And then the other thing you have in front of you, well, we have two more things in front of you, a refrigerator reminder. One of the big ones is that we're working on also is Mary Lee Monroe in May. And then our chamber luncheon on May 8th will be the City of Monroe giving their state of address. And then on May 19th, we have two big events, Camp Bow Wow grand opening, and that's huge. They have been working really hard to open, and they've had some issues, but they're finally opening, and they had their soft opening earlier this year, and now this is their great big party. They'll have a few vendors, a bunch of events going on, activities for the kids. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you have not been out to Camp Bow Wow, it would be really cool if you guys could come. And then the Boys and Girls Club is also doing their mystery wine auction, and we are helping with that as well. And so if you have not bought your tickets yet, that would be a great opportunity now to buy them. The website is open and taking ticket sales. And that's kind of the big one. We also do our monthly newsletter. The deadline is in there if anybody would like to submit any information for that newsletter. And then the other one, the black postcard, is just a cheat sheet of the events, the major events that the chamber helps with or does. And so it's just another reminder for you guys. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions, Council?
Thank you again so much for all of your support. Thank you so much for the LTAC funding and all the events that we're organizing. I hope you guys are enjoying. So thank you for all of that.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for all that you do. And I was at the awards that night. I thought it was great. And you can see the pride. And it was good to see the mix of your awards and then the mix of the other ones. So, yeah, I highly recommend for those that haven't gone. And it was good. Good night.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen. Before you speak, please let the record show that Councilmember Cuttaback entered chambers at 7:28. Good evening.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Councilmember Rasmussen.
I just want to say thank you, Vaughn, and to you and Janelle and your entire board for the work that you do. I mean, you and I have had an opportunity to work on several things throughout the city, and it's been great. And it's not just chamber or club, or it's an entire community focus in everything that you put together. So thank you for that. And just you talked about the Chili Bowl. We've already had discussions since the last one up here that we plan to close or not have a meeting that night so we can all go instead of bringing the chili here. So, yeah. keeping the conversation alive here.
Good. It's good time.
And next time, choosing between chili and board meeting might be the chili one.
You know where I was at.
I local beer, so you think beer.
I thought you were going to bring us some.
Yvonne, thank you very much for everything you do for our community. And please share that with your board.
Thank you.
Next item that we have on our agenda this evening is announcements and presentation, item number 3. This is AB 18103, Presentation Economic Development Update. Mr. Palmer.
Yes. Does this work? I have a pretty loud voice, so I don't think I need a microphone. And the presentation, we'll go through it. I'm more focused on just communicating, and I don't really read through it. But there is something that I do want to show you online, the tool that I've created and I'm working on for economic development purposes here in the city. This one? Okay, got it. Okay, well, Mayor, Council members, City Administrative staff, it's a pleasure to address you for the first time. I've met many of you in the past, but it's the first time for some of the others. My name is James Palmer. I'm the principal consultant in a kind of boutique consulting for called Golden Rule LLC, which basically is doing economic development and business development consulting. My background is from the University of Washington. I went into international business and then returned to Washington to work as the state's economic development manager, where I kind of sat upon an organization that included many organizations down at city levels, county organizations, both at the county government and economic development organizations like the Economic Alliance of Snohomish County and all 39 counties throughout the state, which were the state and federal economic development practitioners both. So it had a really great purview of kind of the structures of economic development, best practices. And I found it was something that was very much in need at the small town community level, and I kind of
put my niche market into, helping small communities develop economic development programs and establish kind of those foundations that allow them to move forward in recruitment, retention, and other aspects of developing a healthy and sustainable business economy in their communities. I'll preface that and or follow that by saying that economic development is a long play. It's a long game. I'm going to be laying down some foundationals and kind of helping the different groups around this community to kind of get on a path of strong economic development efforts. And hopefully then after my contract ends at the end of this year, then there'll be things in place that can be utilized in going forward. Because economic development, it's about people, it's about relationships, it's about trust, it's about getting people involved, it's about knowing who to call when there's something that's happening, like a vacancy, and you have a... I always refer to my job a lot like the game of concentration, where you turn over a card, and you flip it back, and then you got to remember where that other card was. Well, if you've got a vacancy, and you got to remember, oh, who was that person that was looking for 30,000 square feet? Okay, I got to put them together. That's kind of the job of an economic developer, among other things. So I'm briefly going to talk a little bit. I wanted to start, since this is the first time I've approached the council, is kind of what I was brought on to do. Just kind of reiterate that the most of what I felt like the city needed was some business recruitment, retention, and expansion programs, and kind of helping to do grassroots organizing, and that's working with the chamber, working with the Downtown Monroe Association, working with the government. There's many organizations that are all trying to create a very healthy and sustainable economy here in Monroe, and there's a role for connective tissue. You know, there's got to be somebody's kind of rolling around, all three of them, and kind of working to kind of keep those goals all going forward. So the organizational development and the business recruitment and retention expansion are really the two foundations of the work that I'll be doing here. So these came straight out of the scope of work, and they're just again reiterating that it's retention, expansion, kind of working with the different groups here in town. Part of retention and expansion is kind of looking at establishing metrics, and that's one of the things that I've been developing is a kind of dashboard of indicators that's kind of an aggregation of different data from people like Becky and other people in the government that have information that collected with other information kind of gives a snapshot, you know, and that's kind of what we'll be looking at on a court, and that includes things like outreaches to businesses, business visits, how many times did, you know, the city reach into a business and sit down and talk to the business, you know, and track these things, because that connectivity is a very important part of economic development. So, and that actually will be probably next quarter will be the time we'll get. We might have one out before that next quarter, but from next quarter on, we'll be getting this kind of dashboard of indicators that's, again, an aggregate of different information that provides kind of a snapshot of economic health in the community. So just a quick status on the business retention and expansion. We've been meeting with companies, and Deborah's joined me on a couple of them. I've met with a couple of other businesses. How I'm breaking out the business meetings is I'm starting with your top 20 tax producers. Gotta keep an eye on these people. These are the businesses that pay the majority of your revenue. They need love. You know, they need a little visit every once in a while to say, how are things going? City cares about you. And I'll tell you, the first one I had, he was amazed and very happy, and we spent 2 hours talking. And a lot came from that meeting. So, you know, just getting in front of your businesses is a very important part of this job. Just letting them talk, getting them to tell you what their impressions of the city are, what they feel the city can benefit from, and what would they like to see. Because many times these are people of great leadership qualities, resources, and they can do a lot for the community. So kind of integrating them into the community and finding out where they can provide the best kind of participation is a big part of what we're doing in this kind of business outreach, is kind of letting them know that we're open, we want to speak with them, we want to hear their positions, and we definitely appreciate the businesses being in Monroe. Because the part of business retention, or recruitment, retention, and expansion that's the most important is retention. You know, keep what you have. if you can't keep what you have, then you're not going to be able to recruit people. That's kind of a critical element. We've been, so your top 20 tax producers, I'm not going to go into specific names because this is kind of proprietary information, I guess, and so we don't want to share that, but I'll just say that you have some good companies here, and you have some very, I think, eager people to help and be a part of the community, even though they're all very, very busy. Some of them might not be chamber members, they might not be members of the DMA, but they're eager to participate, and their time is valuable, so they don't often get to join up with some of the other organizations. But that's also a really good kind of role for the economic developer to play, is to go in there and talk to them, get the time for them on their schedule and go in and speak with them and talk to them, because they do have a lot of good input. We've seen some great companies, Werner Paddle, Image Mill, Canyon Creek. That was kind of a retention. We thought it might be a retention issue. There was some scuttlebutt that they were leaving, but it turned out it was just the headquarters in Bellevue is collapsing into another office in Texas. But it doesn't affect the Canyon Creek cabinets here at all. But I had a nice conversation with the CEO of Canyon Creek, and you know, he let me know his opinions and kind of what he thought of the community in general. He likes the community here very much, and he feels like they're going to be here for a while. So, you know, that's 400 jobs. That's important to get in front of these people regularly and talk to them. Because if they're unhappy, you don't want to hear about it when they tell you they're closing their business. That's too late by that time. Evergreen Health is a very important part of the community. I think there's a big role for this town to play as a regional kind of health services community for the Sky Valley in general. And one of the things that we've been looking at is that building across the street from Evergreen Health, the Providence building, the developers talked about knocking it down and doing other things, and it's like I'm trying to ensure that it maintains the medical qualities, and so if we can kind of get some tenants in there, maybe look at a developer who would look at dividing it and bringing in a tenant coalition of medical providers or medical related businesses, we can kind of develop a cluster around that area, which I think would be benefit because it's great access to the rest of the valley, right on 2, you got the hospital, you know, so there's a nascent kind of cluster growing there already. Pharmacy right across the street, and so, you know, if we can kind of work with the builder, and forestall any destruction of that existing property and get somebody in there to fix it up and kind of look at it as a potential for medical-related services, I think that'd be a huge win for the community. And been looking at, you know, a couple businesses have contacted us about specific buildings, and we've met with a couple, and really the Timeless Woodsmith, the reason I put him up there, very small business, but arts and crafts are a very important part of any downtown community, and he's very interested in coming into the downtown, and but it's a matter of usage, you know, now he's looking at a building that might not have that zoning use, so we're trying to work with him to find other buildings and maybe find ways that we can get him into that community, because those are great businesses. Arts and crafts businesses do great for kind of the community as a whole. So on the meetings, definitely another part, just not just businesses, but getting in front of other people who are involved in economic development. That includes education, it includes government, it includes, you know, at levels of the county and the state, it includes, other people in healthcare, and that you wouldn't really think around economic development, but they're all important parts of the community that have vested interests, that they're interested in the health of this economy too. So it's like we've had some really good meetings with the De Donato Group around the North Kelsey area and speaking with some of their tenants about kind of how things are there. Meeting with Everett Community College. In fact, he's been one of the people I've been talking about taking up space in the building across there from Providence. Maybe thinking about Everett Community College expanding the offerings around medical programs. You know, they have a Spanish language medical translator program. I think that would be a good fit out here. If they could expand some of the programs to include medical services and we could put them in this medical cluster, I think that would be a really great, you know, kind of beginning to a larger cluster. And again, Lee White is the commercial sales and leasing for that building. And so, in fact, I just spoke with him yesterday when I was in Port Townsend for the Revitalized Washington Conference. He contacted me, and they're anxious to get going. So this is something that, you know, kind of puts some urgency on that one. So we definitely don't want to lose that to anything other than medical. I think that would be a huge loss for the community. So assessments, business districts, business sectors, welcome letters. These are kinds of things that we're doing for the recruitment and retention and expansion. I'd like to kind of go into a little bit of tool right now to kind of show how we're putting this tool together for business retention and expansion. I'll just, if I can tab, where's my glasses? Does the screen catch up, or do I have to do something to...
Yeah.
Yeah, we see it on the top there, but not on the screen.
Mr. Falberg?
Brad.
Technical assistance.
I can see it.
Well, it's on the laptop.
On the laptop, but it's not showing on the screen for some reason. He's got it connected to the internet.
Does that have a...
Quick, somebody call Comcast.
Yeah. There's cake in the other room.
Cake.
Oh. We'll be back in an hour.
Yeah, go grab a piece of cake. We'll be right back.
Duplicate. Do that. Be careful.
Yeah. Here you go. You're an extension.
Yeah.
So what a duplicate. And then we'll do it. There you go. Oh, great. So I created this tool. Google Maps is great. So this tool allows us to take our businesses. So if we have an Excel spreadsheet, I can upload that in here. So I've created these maps to show the different focus areas that we're working on. So you have the downtown Monroe area here, you have the North Kelsey Commercial District, and you have the Fry Islands. And we can kind of create other districts. So let's say I've uploaded all the businesses. I'm just going to do this. In the community, and I've categorized them. I've taken the information the city had, and I've added a whole bunch of information. And I'm continuing to add and build. This is kind of an ongoing thing. So one of the sectors, one of the columns I'm adding to this is the industry sector and a subsector. So let's say I want to say, well, show me all the medical and health and wellness businesses in town. You know, so I can then say, okay, here is like a business that does mental health counseling, this one's massage. Okay, so I could also select to do this by my subcategory. I'm sorry. So I can track all these different, I can place them on the map based on the industry sector, the subcategory, are they home businesses? I can find all my home businesses in the city. I can find all the businesses in one particular industry sector or subsector. So, and again, we breaking out for a couple of different locations. So let's say I want to look at just all the businesses in the North Kelsey area. And then again, I can even change this to then show all the ones in the North Kelsey area that are retail, or show me all the ones in the North Kelsey area that are just health and wellness. So this is a tool for you to understand both kind of data-wise and spatially kind of your businesses. So if I'm trying to recruit members to come into the Downtown Monroe Association, I can go here and just like pull me up all the businesses that are in the downtown and show me the ones that the flag for is a member of the DMA is no. Yeah, and then that'll pop me up, and then I can print that out and have a list of people to call to get them into membership for the Downtown Monroe Association. Or if there's something going on in a particular area related to, say, a highway project or a big problem, I can say, oh, I know all those people on Fry Islands Avenues need to be notified, all the businesses, so I can just like identify all my businesses in the Fry Island District immediately and print out a call list because the phone numbers are in this database as well. So it includes the information that in this. The city receives at the time of the licensing, which includes address, you know, business owner, emails, phone numbers. There's even a place for gross revenues, but a lot of people don't fill it out, but in some cases it is.
Mr. Plummer, we got a question from Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember
Gamble. Yes, absolutely.
Sorry, there's a lighting system up here. When I lean forward, that usually means there's somebody that's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
it's okay. Just go ahead. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, no, I just geek out on data, so...
Yeah, me too.
I'm assuming this, you're refreshing this on a monthly basis, checking to make sure that the businesses are...
I write a report every month to tell me all the new businesses in town, which also includes all the businesses that have closed.
Okay.
So then I go in once a month and I update it, and that'll be either taking a business and pulling it off or adding businesses on.
So when you do that, are you also, is there a subsection in here or a layer that shows the available areas for rent?
That I'm working on.
Okay.
So that is something that we don't collect as a city. So that's something I have to go out and, you know, dig it up and find it. The other thing that I want to include, so a records request to the county for the building owners. So I can pull down all the building owners in the city of Monroe with their address and contact number, and then I can merge that into this. So then that puts the businesses and the owners, because they're not always the same. And then I can see, okay, if there's a location marker but no business marker on top of it, I know that, okay, there's a potential vacancy in that area or something. So otherwise, it's just contacting. That's one of the things I'm doing now, is contacting all brokers, real estate companies, you know, and say, oh, you know, let me know if there's any vacancies, or, you know, if you have customers that are outside of the area, or know somebody looking to come in. But that's really all I have to go to get that information in here. But yeah, I have a column for vacancy, and so I'll be able to pull up all the vacancies. Now, how we use this data is another one of the questions.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Google doesn't have a slicer on here that actually can compose over here where you could actually bring in that real estate available, at least. I mean, maybe not the renting site, but
There's a lot of tools. I'm still learning Google Maps. It's a very robust tool.
Yeah.
But there's lots of things we can do with it. You know, so for instance, we can take subsections of this map and put it on the city's website. You know, looking for a night out in Monroe. Here are all the restaurants. You know, that I can take a subsector out of this, you know, and just list all the restaurants and dining options. One of the things I'm tapping on their subsectors are wedding-related businesses. We have this big event coming up called Marry Me in Monroe. And there's all these businesses that are involved in it through floral or, you know, venue renting or something. So there's a subcategory. I can go in here and say, show me all the wedding-related businesses, you know, which would be helpful for somebody in the chamber who's organizing events around weddings. So a lot of this will have to do with how businesses self-identify, what they want us to put in here. A lot of it's just data we're going to pull down that we have just from their licensing and stuff like that. But this is a tool, and this is what we're, you know, how we use the tool is going to kind of keep going and expanding. We can put it on the website. I use it for recruitment and retention, you know, like making phone calls. I have a notes section in here. So as I'm calling businesses to set up appointments and meet with them, then I keep my notes in here as well, too. So I can, like, oh, okay, I spoke with them on such and such a date and talked about some particular issue. So I have a section. I have my own personal map that's like a larger subset of data that I use for the recruitment and retention. But then we can create all these like subsets that we can put different places. We can put them in magazines, or we can put them online, or we can do all kinds of things with them. So this is something that's just going to, there's over almost 1,000 businesses. It's like 908 something businesses. So a lot of this data is just stuff I'm entering in there, so it's taking me some time. I'm trying to be efficient where I can by, you know, aggregating a lot of stuff and just pulling down, but a lot of this I've just got to kind of look, find the depth of the data and put it in there myself, because it's not being tracked anywhere. And that's why I want to put it in there, because I think it's important information. So I'm really excited about the tool. I think it's very useful, and I think that it's something that many different groups within the city would be able to use. you know, as we start to kind of identify, you know, who are top manufacturers and, you know, what can we do? And then this just gives me easy access to call lists and, you know, notes and everything that I can just print out. So, again, a lot of the role I'm playing is just to kind of get stuff organized, lay the groundwork and the foundation, so by the time my contract ends, we'll have a good solid outreach program that will have been established. The majority of your businesses will have been at least spoken to. Hopefully a lot of them will have had a visit. By a minimum, your top tax producers, your downtown businesses, and your manufacturers will have all been contacted and visited. Those are kind of my focus areas particularly. But, you know, every business should get a call and a visit. You know, the welcome letter is something that we're sending out now for all new businesses. That's another thing. You get a new business in town, they should be welcome and said thank you, and you know, we'd like to come and talk with you and visit you. That's a very important part of what makes a business feel comfortable and welcome in a town. So getting those letters out, so that'll come every month when I get a new report on all the new licenses that were issued for that month, and a business welcome letter goes out to all the businesses. So that will be the foundation of the kind of VRE program. These are long-term relationships. When you're recruiting, it's a matter of knowing who are all the realtors in town, who's all the property owners in town. Are they letting you know when stuff is vacant? So, you know, I'm going to lay that foundation where that information can all be gathered and kind of be put together. But it's going to be an ongoing effort.
Thank you. So. Did you have anything further, Councilmember? Good. Councilmember Cutterback.
So I appreciate you going out and meeting with the businesses and talking to them. I think that's essential. So are you hearing themes from, because that's obviously a retention piece, but it also might help you recruit new businesses. Are you hearing themes, and then what are you doing with that information? Are you then taking it and hearing themes and creating strategies that will help us retain businesses? How are you?
Okay. I am hearing themes. One of the themes, and I can echo it just from having interacted with a few of the staff myself, is that they really do like the administrative staff in the town in general. You know, they've had ease of doing business with the city. They found permitting and that kind of stuff easy. City was open and easy to work with. I've heard that from many of the businesses. One of the things that I've heard from many businesses, particularly the larger employers, is that it's hard to find people.
Yeah.
They're all having a hard time finding people.
Yeah.
Now, whether the city can take actions about that, you know, that's a hard one. But there's definitely an awareness that should be made. For instance, at Canyon Creek, he's like, I can't get anybody to pass a drug test.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, you know, how does the city deal with that? I don't know. Is that something that you all can take action on? You know? Things like working with them on job fairs at the high school, or talking with the high schools, you know, that's another thing that economic development often will do, is work with job fairs and things in local high schools. You know, not all kids are going to track into college immediately. I think that you have great opportunities for entry-level manufacturing positions in this town for a town your size. You've got some really good businesses. You know, I've been around some towns, you know, and you've got good employers, Canyon Creek, you know, Werner Paddle, these are hiring hundreds of people, you know, in good manufacturing positions. Now, whether or not the high schools, you know, they even know these companies are here, these kids know, or have any idea that there's opportunities there for them, I don't know. You know, to tell the high school kids that these are the reasons they're not hiring people, so, you know, lay off the pot for a while before you go, you know, whatever you can, I don't know what the city can do to help people deal with those kinds of issues, but yeah, we're collecting the information to answer your question. In general, I feel that people really like the community here. You know, they find that the community is welcoming. They find that it's a good location. They find the city easy to work with. The regional economy is booming. You know, most people are pretty happy right now, you know. I mean, it's good times. You know, things are going good for most businesses right now.
And my other question was about the target industries. I saw that you had that up there, and I think one was adventure. It's not on here. It's on your PowerPoint. But
okay.
Like adventure, and I think you had diet, maybe food or something. But you didn't have manufacturing as one of those. Is there a reason for that?
Well, I'm not sure which slide you're talking about. So
it was targeted industries, and it had adventure, food, beverage, and maybe medical or health, if I remember.
Food, beverage, outdoor recreation, tourism, and healthcare.
Yeah, so there's your target.
Food, beverage, outdoor recreation, tourism, healthcare.
Yeah, so I was just wondering.
It's not an exhaustive list. Manufacturing is always on my list.
Okay.
Because manufacturing are high-paying, good-wage jobs, generally. I think a lot of what I'm targeting for these is for around very specific things in Monroe right now, which is that creating a health cluster around that building and the hospital. Food and beverage has a lot to do with the DMA and getting businesses on the first floors of the DMA, of the downtown area that are really focused on people coming and going on a regular basis.
Sure.
You know, you want then food and beverage, breweries, you know, the microbreweries, things like that that tend to have food and stuff. Those go very well and draw in lots and lots of people. And your downtown needs stuff, and now it needs a little more. And so I'm focused on that. And outdoor and recreation, tourism, geographically, you've got a really good position on that particular industry, and that's a heavy growth industry and a $1 billion industry in just this county alone. Your access to Highway 2 in the North Cascades up there is a good location, and so that makes sense to be here. And so manufacturing is always on my list, but yeah.
And so when you heard from employers that hard to find good people, because I think that's happening throughout.
It's not just Monroe's problem.
Yeah. It's the culture, the environment we have right now.
Yes.
Are you hearing from employers that there's things around transportation or housing that if the city looked at might help? Or you're not hearing any themes around that?
No, transportation hasn't come up. I have worked in other communities where that is a problem. Parking, I don't really hear that unless you're in the downtown sections. That seems to be every downtown's complaint, but it doesn't seem to be a complaint in the Frylands or North Kelsey or anything like that. So those typical problems, no. I really was not hearing a lot of glaring problems. Like I said, finding good qualified employees, also the minimum wage, family leave, you know, the general rundown of the state's, you know, kind of thumb on them. I got home a couple of them, you know, but that's not anything you can do. You know, that's not in the purview of Monroe. So.
Okay, thank you.
I like I said before, I've been to some other cities and worked in some other communities. You guys are doing pretty good right now.
Thank you. So. Just a point of clarification, tourism, that includes hotels?
It does, yeah. Anything that has to do with overnights and recreational activities.
Sounds good. Councilmember Scarborough.
Have you heard any complaints about 2 weeks ago some issues from people in the audience that were trying to start a business, and there was at the bottom line, there was a $27,000
traffic impact
study. Lewis Street across from the KQ. So are you hearing any complaints about that stuff? Because I don't know if you can find $27,000 worth of work.
I have not heard that one. So I have, my business visits are just beginning. So I'm not going to say I have an exhaustive survey of businesses to give you a full range of comments that I'm hearing. I have not heard that one. Do I hear that fees in general are onerous? Every time. I mean, that kind of goes without saying that they hate paying fees. Now, whether your fees are too high or they're inappropriate, you know, that's something that we can maybe make a decision after we've talked to a lot of businesses. And then you want to compare it. You know, fees are high only in relative to other communities that they have a choice to locate in. So traffic impact fees are an important part of siting a business. And they are in every community. Now, whether you are par with other communities, I think that's a question you might want to address. The two waive traffic impact fees, you know, that's a whole other question.
Okay, you talked about the top 20 list.
Yeah.
You didn't want to go into it here.
Specific names. I mean, I can speak with the individual members privately, but not in public forums.
Is there a possibility that we turn around and lose there and we can get a copy of the top 20?
provided. I think there are requirements that no, our finance director is saying no.
So individual taxpayer information is actually not considered a public record, and there's RCW that addresses that. In fact, in order to share it with Mr. Palmer, I had to have him. The affidavit that the Department of Revenue requires for anybody who gets that information.
Okay.
So even within the city, there's just a few of us who can have that information.
Okay.
We can talk about it in the aggregate, but we cannot give you specifics.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Is there anything further you'd like to go over in your presentation?
Not unless you have more questions.
All right. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Palmer.
Thank you. Yeah, look forward to more.
All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is public comment. This is a time set aside for members of the public to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. People who come up to speak have 3 minutes. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Anybody? Ms. Atkinson, do you want to? Okay. We'll go ahead and move on to the next one. We're just picking people at random. We'll move on to new business item number one. This is AB 18-104, confirmation of appointment, interim director of public safety. All right. So this is me, and I had the pleasure of interviewing two well-qualified candidates about a week and a half ago for the interim director of public safety. The person who I am requesting confirmation of is Mr. Larry Dickerson. He is here in the audience today. Thank you for coming this evening. Do you have still have valve stems on your valve stem caps on your tires? Or?
Pardon me?
Yeah, I just want to make sure you got your valve stem tire caps. Yeah, you're good. Okay. Mr. Dickerson comes to us with quite a bit of experience working in different jurisdictions. He is a graduate of the FBI National Academy. He is committed to filling the position through recruitment, selection, and appointment for a permanent police chief. And we're estimating that process will be somewhere between 90 and 120 days. As you know, it took some time to go through the process for a city administrator. It could take a little bit longer. I think that's all that I have right now. Do you have anything to add, Ms. Smith?
I don't.
Okay, Mr. Dickerson, would you like to come up and say a few words?
I'm the mayor, city council. It's nice to be here in Monroe. I've driven through many times on my way over to Leavenworth, and I live in Olympia. I've lived there. I went to high school there, so I've lived there most of my life. I spent 35 years with the Lacey Police Department, and I do know he just retired as a police chief, and I wish him the best, because he was a captain with the State Patrol down in the Olympia Detachment. I was a deputy chief there in Lacey, and we knew one another. And I also knew another police chief that you had up here. His name was Chuck Dahman. I was a reserve officer, and I'm not trying to give you my age, but I was a reserve officer, and Chuck was a chief in Lacey, and then he came up here and became the chief in Monroe. But I retired. Well, I came up through the ranks. I started as a reserve officer in Lacey, and I was a patrol officer, and I was a detective, and then I was a patrol sergeant, and then I was a detective sergeant, and I spent 24 years as a deputy police chief there, and then I became the police chief. I worked for a city manager by the name of Greg Cubio. Some of you may have met Greg. Great teacher. I was fortunate when I started in law enforcement to have the opportunity to work with a police chief by the name of John Mansfield, who came out from San Diego. And he kind of changed the department around, and we kind of realized the importance of getting out in the community and getting involved in the community. And a lot of the things that I do when I go in as an interim police chief, and I've worked for two cities up here. I actually worked for Mount Lake Terrace. John Caulfield was city manager then, and Rebecca over here in Mill Creek, I worked for her for a while. I come into a police department, and I know how the officers feel, because I was in the same boat they're in. You know, they're getting a new police chief after 16 years, and they don't know what to expect, and you know, there's a lot of anxiety, and you know, so you come in, and the first thing I try to do is get to know them. I like to do one-on-one conversations with them and get feedback from them and on maybe things that they would like to see, the directions the department could go in and stuff like that, you know, just get them involved. And I also, I like to go out and walk around the community. I like to meet with the business people. You guys got a real long stretch of business side parking down here. I know this is one, but it's you got a lot of businesses down there to walk through. And, you know, I like to see the officers get out of the cars also and go into the businesses and introduce themselves. And I try to put that into every city that I've been in. But all kinds of little things like that. But we still do the enforcement aspects of it, too. We still have to do the, you know, the traffic enforcement. We still have to, you know, respond to calls for service. And my motto has always been provide the service. You know, if somebody calls you because they blew up his mailbox, it may be nothing to you as a police officer, but it's a lot to him. And I'm big on code enforcement. I think the police department, when you drive around and you see things, we can work with Public Works or other departments in the city to point out those problems and bring them to the attention of the departments that need to handle it. The last city that I worked in was College Place, a little town out of Walla Walla. And the Public Works Department did code enforcement, and the police department started helping them. And we could get more done when they see a uniform walk up and say, hey, you know, you need this for violation, you need to get it fixed, you know, and work in those directions. But I like to be involved. I like to do a lot of different things, and I really look forward in working with all, you know, department directors in the city, because I think that's really important. And I look forward to working with the men and women of your police department. I did a lot of research on your department, and you've got a good department over there. They do a lot of things, and you've got a lot of specialty assignments, which is really important in a department because it gives people places to go, get out of patrol and stuff like that. And it's a good morale factor. So there's a lot of good things going on over there. I'm not here to say that it's a foul of the department, because it isn't. Any questions of me?
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Yeah.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I'll move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Mr. Larry Dickerson as interim director of public safety.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback for the requested action in Agenda Bill 18-104. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank
welcome.
You very much.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excuse
me.
Sir.
Cassidy.
Kevin.
Your job. Congratulations.
Watch your water.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I know, right?
Ben.
Have a nice evening.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Don't call me.
All right. The next item, thank you, everybody. The next item we have on our agenda is Agenda Bill Number 18-105. This is declaring a police weapon equipment for equipment surplus. Ms. Knight.
The issue in front of the council this evening is to approve Resolution 10-2018, and this is to surplus a weapon that will be provided to the chief.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to approve Resolution Number 010-2018, declaring police weapon equipment as surplus and authorizing its disposition.
Second. I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford to approve Resolution Number 010-2018, declaring police weapon equipment as surplus and authorizing its disposition. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is council member reports. We don't have any committee reports, so we'll go ahead and head down the dais. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, as I said earlier, attended the Chamber Awards night, which was great. Got to see the mayor present the Spark Plug Award to a very worthy. Very worthy recipient in Diane Forth. That was very much surprised. Yeah, it was really, 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 really cool. She was doubly awarded that night. She got both from the city and then also from the DMA. So she was. It was really good to see. And Brad did a great job taking pictures. It was fantastic. I know I'm always a walking in commercial for turf fields, but this is a. Just a testament to what they do, because I was actually coaching a baseball game that night up at the high school, and in the middle of about two or three innings into the game, where I came running over to present, because I presented for the Monroe Public School Foundation. We had an award that night, and it absolutely downpoured for. I don't know. It was so loud you could hear it over the talking or the presenting in the comments. But because of those fields that we invested in, is what we were playing on the field that we put money towards. They were able to go into the dugouts that were nicely covered, wait, you know, again, an hour or two until it was just halfway raining instead of sideways raining and flooding in the streets, which it actually was. It was flooding, and they finished the game. So that was. That was pretty good to give me time to go in and watch the awards. It was perfect. Anyway, there you go.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, attended the community awards as well, and it was really, really cool just to see so many people there and just leaders from our community recognizing volunteers, staff, other community members, and it was just a lot of fun and good night to be there. So we did have a P4 committee meeting tonight. And just to let council know, I mean, the only discussion item we had was the TIB, which is coming back for a public hearing on May 12th.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Nothing to report tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Burr, cut it back.
I attended the YWCA luncheon last Wednesday in Everett, and it was wonderful. Bishop Desmond Tutu's daughter spoke, and she was amazing. And there are two, I guess, their mission statement is empowering women and eliminating racism, and it was really inspirational, so definitely worth the time.
Thank you.
Nothing was recorded.
Okay. Anything from staff this evening? We still have discussion items this evening. All right. Ms. Knight?
Just a quick update on the agenda and note for the meeting on May 1st that we will be bringing back a number of items for you for second and final. So parking, speed, nuisance, WATV, and the change of speed on US 2 will all be coming back for second read on May 1st. And then looking forward into the next agenda on May 8th, you'll note that you have a joint meeting with the Planning Commission to talk about the unified development regulations. So those are the things that you can look forward to in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Welcome.
As for me, I did present. I did present Ms. Forth with a spark plug award. It was literally a spark plug hanging on a piece of ribbon and a certificate just thanking her for taking the initiative and doing service in our community, referring myself to the DMA, but she's also done other things in our community. I understand that she is at the same conference that Mr. Palmer was at on downtown revitalization. A number of the people from the DMA and also my wife and also our community development director are attending that for a number of days. They're returning tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll learn more about what we could be doing to better revitalize our downtown over the next couple weeks. But she said she was going to wear the spark plug at the event, at the conference. I also did a ribbon cutting for a new business called Relief Hair Care. Their specialization is removing lice from people, and they had three chairs there. They're an expansion from an existing business that's in Arlington that has six chairs. So they felt that they had enough business here in the Sky Valley that they were able to locate three chairs here. It was a really great event, and then had Bliss Yoga. I don't know if you have anybody that's going to Bliss Yoga. My wife seems to be going there almost every other day right now. And they did a community cleanup. It was Earth Day on Sunday, so they did a community cleanup where they went through and picked up garbage in Al Borland Park, and then after that they did yoga for an hour, and I participated in not the yoga part. I participated in the cleanup and then did a ribbon cutting, tree planting, and dedication ceremony over at Bliss Yoga, and that place seems to be doing really well. Right next door there, Suzanne Sue from Artisan, formerly the Dutchman. She had a cupcake store right next to the place. It's now become sort of a health food place. So it's gone from cupcakes and cookies and candy to sort of healthy, blended, fruity things. And I think there are a lot of people that go to the hot yoga and then go right next door to get those wonderful treats and everything. So that was Sunday. And I thank you for confirming the appointment of our interim public safety director. And I think that's all that I have for today. On Friday we're meeting with Senator Palumbo to talk about 522.
Yes, and with the Association of Washington Cities to talk about
anti-relations. Yeah, so I'll be taking Friday off, and we'll be here all day Friday on 522 and talking about making it, finding ways to make it easier for cities like ours that actually want to annex territory. So that's those are two major items on Friday. All right, any questions for me? I'm sorry, Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. Two things. First of all, since you brought that up, if you ever do decide to do the yoga, would you please let Brad know so you can get pictures? City website.
We do Facebook Live.
But the real reason my life was on was because next week's agenda lists the Legislative Affairs Committee update. I believe that should be P4 because
P4 is tonight.
Practically, your update would be the next week.
Yep.
Usually update the week following.
Yep.
And legislative didn't meet last week.
We'll actually have, I think, both minutes because they haven't had a regular meeting yet.
Okay. That was it.
All right. Thank you. All right. I think anything else, any absences that we need to note? Okay. I will be gone on Tuesday, May 15th. So Mayor Pro Tem will know that meeting.
It's far out there, but I will be out on the 10th
of July. Okay.
I just always like it when vacation actually shows up in the extended agenda.
Okay, so we'll mark you out on July 10th.
Yeah. No, I'll be in Alaska.
Councilmember Hanford?
I'll be absent June 19th.
Okay, if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and move on to our discussion items this evening. The first discussion item is discussion item number one. It's AB 18106, Snoqualmie Valley Transportation, Monroe Duval Connector. Ms. Knight.
And I am actually just going to introduce this item and then allow Amy Bates to come up to the podium and describe it in greater detail. She's the director of Snoqualmie Valley Transportation and can talk a little bit more detail about what the plan proposal is. But in short, the reason why this item is coming to you this evening is because we are asking the council to fund up to $25,000 to support a transportation connector between the city of Duval and the city of Monroe. And this came out of some survey work that was done earlier where it was recognized that if you're in Duval and you want to get medical attention from any of our providers here in Monroe, it actually takes you several hours to get here because you have to first take a metro bus into Seattle, and then you have to take a bus to Everett, and then you have to take a bus into Monroe. And so Amy Bakes and her group are actually working to try and make that a 15-minute drive instead of a four-hour drive. So come on up to the podium, and we can let you describe a little bit more about the proposal. This has gone to the Finance Committee, so there was a discussion with Finance Committee about funding this project. It's not currently in your budget for 2018, and so what we're looking for is direction from the council to have staff include that in the upcoming budget amendment. So
big, so I'll go ahead and let you describe the project.
Okay, thanks. That was awesome. Good job.
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, council members. Do any of you actually know South Pauline Island Transportation? We've been around since 2003. We used to be up here until about 2012. Funding got cut. And we do a number of different kinds of service. I like to talk about them as sticks and blobs and loops. It's kind of like, you know, fixed route service like a normal bus, or there's circulator routes, or there's like big blobby areas in which you can just call up and go point to point for a dollar. So that's the kind of service that we do. One of the things that we found in doing this is that you can't really have two different bus systems in a rural area, or as PSRC says, rural's hard. Most of the models that anybody looks at, they see them pretty much as you have your fixed route buses and then you have your special needs buses. And in a rural area, we found that you really have to have everybody on the same bus. So you have to get really creative about the way that you do things. So since we lost the ability to do the door-to-door service here in 2012, we've been trying really hard to get back up here, particularly for people in Carnation and Duval who need to be able to get here. And as Deborah said, it takes, on a perfect day, if you make all the connections, it takes 2.5 hours to get here one way from Duval. For the most part, it takes between 4 and 9 hours to make it the 10 minutes that it takes to drive that distance. So there's individuals who need dialysis. There's actually available beds for dialysis up here. And instead, they end up getting on the Valley Shuttle and they go all the way down to Snoqualmie, and then we pick them up with the door-to-door bus and take them all the way up to Snoqualmie Ridge. People want to be able to shop here. And I don't know if there's a ton of people from Monroe who are trying to get to Duval. I know that there are seniors who are trying to get to Carnation because there's a group there that supports people with Alzheimer's. And they can't get here. They can't get there by bus. So we've got this weird, there's a county line in the middle, and apparently we're not supposed to cross it or something. I don't know. So we've been doing this since about 2003, and about a year and a half ago, I wrote a grant to Easter Seals to try and get a coalition going for transportation in the entire Snoqualmie Valley from North Bend all the way to Monroe, because Monroe is in Snoqualmie Valley, despite the fact that Pasco County line in between. So we got $100,000 to do that. And one of the first things that we did was we did a survey. We sent it to 26,000 plus homes, every home, North Bend all the way to Monroe. And despite what Mr. Palmer said, which is you don't have problems with transportation, you have serious problems with transportation. 82% of the respondents in the survey, which was statistically valid, said that there was not adequate transportation to meet their needs. The lowest was North Bend at 80%, the highest was Carnation at 93%, and Monroe was in the middle there somewhere. So if you want more of the data, or if anybody's a particular data monk, I know, I can get you the information from the survey, but really what it comes down to is we need to be able to get people from King County to Snohomish County, particularly along the 203 corridor, and there's currently no way to get there. So in building the coalition, there was medical providers and schools and cities. Ben Swanson from City of Monroe was there, and Laura Thomas from Duval, Kim Lisk from Carnation, Ken Hearing from North Bend, there was a gentleman from Fall City. Pretty much everybody was involved in this. So the coalition decided that of all the things that we could fund, the smartest thing that we could try and put our energies behind was to fix this weird gap that we have between Duval and Monroe. So that's what we're doing. So the map that you have, that was created by Ben Swanson. And the idea behind this is that it would be about every hour, hour and a half, Leah Duvall come directly up, blank along this odd little path here that Ben came up with someone from Public Works. Do you know who it was, Deborah?
Mr. Feilberg.
Yay! Good job.
Okay. It's a good pass.
Well, the idea was to try and hit as many human services as possible, but plus also get as many shoppers to the stores as we possibly can. So I think our rider numbers are really shy of what it's going to end up being. But still, I mean, it's a start. It's something to get people up, and hopefully community transit then can get them out, but at least we can get them up the valley. That makes sense? Okay. So, does anybody have any questions about this? Transportation is kind of a weird, messy business, but I like it. I just want to get people ready.
Before we call on council members, just to verify, just to confirm, so the hours of operation would be 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.? Is that what I see?
I don't know. But, so, we had a meeting last week, and at it were Sam Lowe, Darcy Cheeseman, Chapman, is it?
Yes.
Looks like Cheeseman. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I hate
announcing people's names. Sorry.
It's okay.
There was two people from King County Metro. There was a person from King County Department of Transportation, Snoqualmie Tribe, Ben Swanson, and Deborah, and a gentleman from Community Transit. The challenge on putting this together really is just the money. King County said we'll cover 65% if y'all can cover 35%. And it actually comes down to, like, they're willing to pay $65,000 if Snohomish County funders in some way can do the remainder.
Okay.
So, does that make sense?
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and call on council members. Councilmember Hanford?
Thank you. So, I did have a couple questions, but I wanted to say that we did talk about this in the finance committee meeting, and Councilmember Scarborough and I were very much excited to see some transportation options, and for the seeing this as a pilot project to kind of see what kind of numbers end up writing for the small amount of money that is being requested of Snohomish County funders. I think it's well worth providing transportation for a year and then making a determination after that time. The question I had was, based on this route, so theoretically, have there been any talks about where the stops would be yet, or is it just...
Well, no, not exactly, because we can fiddle around with the times, we can mess around with where the stops are. We have a circulator loop in downtown North Bend that for the first 2 months, I think, had like 50 people on it in a month, running it from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., and now it does like 1,000 people a month. What we do is we find the best path with the least number of left turns and hopefully crossing the railroad tracks the least amount of time. And then we would actually go into, like, in downtown North Bend, we start at the senior center, and then we go to the post office and the QFC and the library and whatever. People actually, they start taking this. In a rural area, what you need is kids on the bus who are on Facebook. And all of a sudden, things just go boom, boom, boom. The numbers go up a lot. I recognize this doesn't solve everybody's problem. It doesn't get people going. It doesn't get people to the Valley Shuttle in time to get them to a job at Snoqualmie Casino. It doesn't get them to Genie Industries on the other side of the ridge. To do that, you'd have to have buses running at 3 o'clock in the morning. But it's a start. I mean, at least it's something. We can see if it works. And if it doesn't, we could fiddle around with it, or we could fiddle around with it halfway through the year. The good thing about working with a nonprofit as opposed to working with a county is that you can just go, I don't think this is working. We go, okay, talk to a bunch of people. We change it. We say, we're not going to go there, we're going to go there. Or we're going to change the path or whatever. You end up with the same writers over and over and over again. So it's a matter of putting something out on Facebook, posting something on the buses, having the drivers hand out things to the riders, and you can make a change. We've done it before within 3 weeks, which is kind of different than, you know, if you want to make a change with like the transit company.
One of the things that we talked about in the committee was having said all that, as far as how excited we are about this possibility, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So people might hop on the bus to go to Duval for lunch, just as much as people in Duval might hop on the bus to come to the room. So just something to be aware of.
We expect there's going to be some people who go back. One of the things that we see happen most quickly is at-risk youth, you know, like the teens who can't get around, who maybe move school districts or whatever. We have three different school districts. So we have one up here, and we have Riverview, and we have Snoqualmie Valley School District. And kids that get separated that still need to be able to get back and forth to visit friends. That happens a lot. People move because they move from place to place because they want to be able to go from place to place. So buses are good for that. And you might have some people that either, but mostly it's people from King County. Really want to get to Walmart, Fred Meyer, and Evergreen Health Monroe, and dialysis.
That's all. Thanks. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. I think it's admirable to try to bring a coalition together to try to solve a transportation issue. You have a couple questions. Did I hear you say that you got $100,000 from the Easter Seals grant, or did I?
We did. Well, we got $100,000, and we did the survey.
Okay.
Had the people who are the fiduciary partner for this, since my organization doesn't do mobility management, it's a very specialized transportation-y thing.
Okay.
The fiduciary partner is HopeLink.
Okay.
So HopeLink has hired a person who's, we currently have the group as a whole, and then we have a task force for a pilot project, which is, I'm on that one, and then a 5-year transit plan, which I would really encourage the city to get involved in, because it's a Snoqualmie Valley transportation plan.
So the grant,
and then there's another one for,
okay.
Yeah.
So that grant was split up, because it looked like in our document, our agenda item, it was 20,000 of that 100 goes here.
I think it's 25.
Okay.
So it's 125 is the cost overall. We'll probably come in lower than that. It's 25 from the Easter Seals, which is the remainder of the Easter Seals grant.
Okay.
And then 35,000 from funding partners in Snohomish County somewhere.
Okay.
And King County Metro Transit is willing to provide the vehicle for free and all the maintenance, and give us $65,000 worth of operational support.
Okay.
So, and we work a lot with that portion of King County Metro. It's called the CAT program, Community Access Transportation.
How likely, once you start a program and if people are using it and then you hit the sustainability of the program, how likely is it that you think you'll get funding for this for a year or two?
Well,
is there funding out there that you already know of, or do you estimate that you'd have to come back here to keep it going?
Honestly?
You don't know?
I don't know. I've never done this before.
Okay.
I mean, I've never gone out and said, okay, you give me $5,000, you give me $5,000, and I'll build 25 different entities. But the place where we currently, I think that what would most likely happen is I write it into the WSDOT grant that I write through the PSRC, WSDOT 5310 Special Needs Transportation Formula. I have to write that every 2 years, and that's coming up. So I write it in as an expansion. PSRC has more A grades to give out now, if that means anything is a thing. So I get about half of my money from Washington State Department of Transportation, half of it from King County Metro Transit in various different guises, and $125,000 a year from the Snoqualmie Tribe. Yeah. So what would happen is, in order to sustain it, I would probably end up going to a little bit of WSDOT, a little bit more from Snoqualmie Tribe if it turns out to be successful. And I don't know.
Okay.
I would expect at some point that community transit would want to step in, because they're the transit provider in
sure.
this area, and we're a whole lot cheaper than community transit or King County Metro.
Yeah. Another question just about marketing it. Do you have a plan that how you're going to get this information out once it starts and get it out to the people who need it?
Metro's got a remarkable marketing animal.
So they're going to handle that for us here too? Or?
We've always done our own marketing. I mean, SBT's always done our own marketing. We do it through the cities. We do it through, I mean, we're here.
Okay.
You know, we're not somewhere else. So, like when we started the Valley Shuttle, it's the fixed route service that goes between North Bend and Duval, and it does this with two buses every 90 minutes all day long. And when Metro was running the routes, they had 7 to 12 riders a day, and we have 65 to 120 a day on the same route. But we live here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what we do is we'll pick up anybody that's safe to pick up. Even if people don't flag us down, if we see somebody walking along 203, there's room to pull over. We'll just pull over and say, get on the bus, you don't have to pay. But we also do extensive dry runs where at every single stop we get out with a crew of people who go out to all of the local businesses and go, we're here.
And then you were mentioning that we have to do a budget amendment. Where were we looking at taking this from, the Finance Committee? Did you guys discuss that? I don't know if it was, I didn't see it in here, I could have missed it.
We didn't have a chance to go through that.
Just where it was coming from and if it affected any.
I can't recall, Ms. Hazard. I know you and Mr. Swanson worked on it. What was the budget?
So the reality would be that we ended 2017 a lot higher than anticipated,
right.
So we would use some of that unallocated beginning fund balance towards that account situation.
Yeah. Okay. So
it would not affect other programs already
mentioned. Right, okay.
One of the things that came up in the meeting too was, and this was brought up by Don Okazaki with King County Metro, was if they have 25,000 from the Hoboken Easter sales thing, and they're willing to put up 65, they could just front load pay for the first, you know, like 8 months or something to give the parties in Snohomish County more time to come up with the funding. The challenge here is that we have a deadline. So we have a go, no-go date,
right,
that we have to decide what the pilot program is going to be. And as of a couple days ago, it was May 2nd.
Coming up.
it was a little short.
Yeah.
And they just spoke with the folks at Easter Seals, and Easter Seals is willing to extend the deadline and say the pilot project starts August 1st and that we have until May 23rd to come up with at least letters of intent to fund whatever.
My only concern with this really is not knowing how many of our residents would use it. You know, we're using money from taxes, residents who live here, to fund residents coming here. Now, I know it sounds like positively impact our businesses, I get that,
but that's my only heartburn is going, do our residents need it, and is this something they would see as a priority and would fund with their tax dollars to move people from another county to our county? I get the business paying for the businesses. That is really just my only heartburn. It's just going, yeah, we're using, you know, 35, it says in here, 1,000 we didn't budget for it. If they had budgeted for it and had a discussion or had more data showing that our residents need it, I guess.
Well, I have the survey results that I can get to you.
Yeah. I think you stated you didn't know how many residents go from here to Duval and how many would use it.
Well, it's hard to tell with the type of survey that we did. We used a really simplistic survey model only because most of the transportation surveys that people have seen are like 10 pages long. They're like crazy long.
Yeah.
Because they want to know exactly, well, you want to move from here to there at what time, how many days a week, you know, and it's with every single question. So our survey was pretty simple. It said, do you want to be able to take a bus? If you don't care, don't answer the survey. Where do you want to go? How often would you ride? Do you need any special accommodations? Are you disabled? Do you need a lift? That was about it.
Yeah.
So it's when do they want to go, where do they want to go, and that was about it.
I was just going to say on that, the way that you broke that simplistic down, do you have those answers by the cities?
We do. We have maps that say, like, they've got these goofy dots all over them, but we've got a map that shows, like, the city of Monroe and where the people want to go to, and it's exactly what you would think.
Where do they want to go?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
They want to go to Snoqualmie Valley, they want to go to Seattle, they want to go to Radnor, they want to go to Everett, they want to go to Lynnwood. It's kind of like, it's difficult. Everybody kind of wants a Harry Potter night bus, right?
Oh, definitely.
That's awesome.
That's what I would love to provide the Harry Potter night bus. But I mean, being able to go door to door for $1 by calling in advance, we take all of these requests from all over the place, and even with our riders, I can say, well, most people want to go from the outlying areas. Most people want to go from city center to city center. But unless you go out and you talk to every single person and go, where do you work? Mm-hmm. How would you get there by bus? Mm-hmm. Oh, and you have to be there at 5:55. Okay. And try and map out every single person's stuff. All you can do is kind of look for an overall network. And what we have is we finally have an overall network in the King County portion of Snoqualmie Valley, and it doesn't come up here.
Right.
So
I get that.
Just, you know, kind of trying to complete the spine of the valley.
Yeah, I get that.
And speaking to the people who I've spoken to with businesses here, many people have said, especially lower income people, have a very hard time getting to dialysis, getting to the hospitals and medical clinics, because there isn't a bus that sort of just kind of bikes around downtown.
Yeah. Well, that brings up a good point, because if you're stopping around in those areas, there I could foresee residents in these areas hopping on a bus possibly and getting from place to place. So that's something that could be, I don't know what the data is, but that could be something.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why you do a pilot project.
Okay.
Usually with transportation in rural areas, if you build it, they will come.
Thank you.
Because they don't have any other options.
Thank you. We've got three other council members. Have you been doing outreach to these other partners, potential partners that are listed on here, like Providence Medical, Evergreen Health, and Puget Sound Kidney Center?
Marianna Hannafeld, who is, have you met her?
Snowtrack?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she says she potentially has three other funders at $5,000 each.
Okay, so that would reduce that $35,000 ask that's there by $15,000.
Right, and we would continue to go out and try and find additional parties to put money in. And the tribe might come in, but they're right in the middle of doing like a voting on a new tribal council or something.
Okay.
But they already fund $50,000 a year in the Valley Shuttle and $125,000 for our demand response operations. And they do actually, they are very interested in getting involved in this. It's just that they can't make any decisions as quickly.
Okay, sounds good. Councilmember Scarborough?
Well, here's, let me see if I can kind of paraphrase what we talked about in our meeting. We talked about this being the grant. We talked about the $30,000 or $35,000. We talked about trying to get that money from everywhere and not just $35,000 in Monroe. And kind of what I'm hearing you say is that you've got a couple of those to bring that $35,000 figure down. And so the question was, what is our share? So it appears to me that what we're voting on, or going to be asked to vote on, is that we provide the whole thing or everything that can't be gotten everywhere else. And that this is a one-time deal for a one-time year to see how it works. That there may or may not be $130,000 next year, and we'll have to look at it and see. I can see by the map, as we talked about, the people in the Frylands could possibly get on it, get to Walmart, get to Fred Meyer, get back on it, get home. And downtown the same way, so that's a plus for citizens of Monroe. It's kind of the first time I've heard about the fact that if we didn't get this $30,000 or $35,000, that we could run this thing for about 8 months on the grant money that's available, and then say we need to relook at how much we need to finish this out for the year. But the May 2nd or 3rd deadline...
23rd. It's May 23rd now.
May 23rd, yeah, that deadline is pretty necessary to figure out how to come up. Now I'm saying the May 23rd, I thought, was the deadline to come up with the other $35,000, so we have the total. And I'm hearing that maybe we don't have to do that. So maybe you can clarify that for us.
Okay. But from what I understand, because I'm not in charge of this thing, the coalition's in charge of this thing. I just run the bus. And I don't even care if it's us, it could be somebody else. I don't care. I just want people to get rides. So what I understand is this. It's $125,000, right, to do this for a year. As I understand it, the Easter Seals people who are still holding the purse strings, and it's a you only get reimbursed when you actually spend the money, they didn't give us $100,000 up front. They want to know that whatever we're doing is a one-year pilot, and they want 6 months worth of data in order to go, okay, you can have the remainder for the rest of the time. So I don't think that Easter Seals upfronts anything in terms of the costs. I think it's only a reimbursement thing. From what I understand, from what happened in the meeting that Deborah was in and Ben was in the other day, what Metro had suggested, King County Metro had suggested, was, you know, if this is really going to be a stumbling block, as long as we can get like letters of intent that say, yeah, we have every intent of doing this, why doesn't Metro just pay up front for the first however long it takes to go through the amount that Metro has promised, which is $65,000 plus the bus and maintenance? So, I don't know, honestly. I wish I did. I mean, I wish I...
Well, in that, with that being said, I'm not sure where there needs to be an obligation from us for the $35,000 at this time.
I don't think Metro is going to move forward unless they know that Snohomish County Partners
is going to be
come in, because they're feeling like, they're sort of taking on the lion's share of this. And, you know, I don't blame them.
Well, yeah, and we talked about it in our meeting. We talked about the amount of other entities that might share in the expense of that $35,000. And again, I'm hearing that you have a couple of those here up for $5,000 here and there.
This is what I heard from Mariana Hannafeld from Snowtrack.
Okay, so do we need those definite answers before the 23rd?
That's what I was told. I wish I knew more.
You know enough.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you.
I was very intrigued when first heard this. And, the concept of kind of being there for with the those of medical need in mind. My first thought was, and given my profession, the youth being served across communities, and I mentioned that tonight. So I think it's definitely serves a wide variety. I'm also seeing a lot of thought of potentially, we were talking about lunch, people going from Monroe going to lunch in Duval and vice versa. I also kind of saw this expanding community events, whether it be the Corks and Cakes or 5Ks or Tri Monroe, all the stuff that we do, easy way to bring Duval here and vice versa.
Council member Lowe mentioned something about taking people to the fairgrounds, that they're senior days.
Yeah. So I think it has definitely has that benefit to it. In the notes, I just didn't see if this was a Monday through Friday type of service or if it was weekend. So that. When I'm thinking the economic impact of it as far as on the tourism side and stuff like that, that's kind of, the weekend is where a lot of, pretty much all the events are. And so it peaks into that, but. But I like the concept.
That's a big problem.
It would be. Very interesting to see the stats on from that survey is specifically what Monroe was wanting.
If I send it to Deborah, can she get me out to it?
So I appreciate that point being brought up by Councilmember Fairback and interested in seeing that. So
I wish we had service on the weekends too. We're just a project of the Mount Si Senior Center. Somebody came to us with the bus in 2003 and said, we're cutting all our routes. We're going to get your seniors around here. Have a bus and we'll give you $1,000 a month to help operate it. So and last year we did 42,232 rides. But it's just, we move as fast as we can, and just getting that coalition has been miraculous to have all these people at the same table saying how important it is and how in a rural area transportation is life. It's just, it makes my heart happy because I've been Horton here's a who running around for 6 years and this puff ball going, look, it's just Snoqualmie Valley, there's people in here, really. So I'm really excited that so many people are actually involved in this and interested.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Remind me, how much do we, I know we support the senior center bus.
About 15K?
Is it 15K to the senior center bus? I just remind the council that this goes back to 2012 when that service went away. And that was one of the reasons why we started supporting that senior center bus. There definitely is, the transportation need in the aggregate and in general. I am very much in favor of getting more, data. I'm intrigued. I like the route, Brad, that you guys came up from. It is very, you went right the way that I would have gone because I look at the Brook, my one goes right by the Brookdale, the Regency, Senior Center,
YMCA,
the Everett Community College, and tying all of those together, which is great. And I know that when I'm looking at the map here, Monday through Friday, so that dollar would get you from Monroe to the end of line, to the ball on 203, is that what I'm seeing? Correct?
The dollar would get you to North Bend.
Okay, that's what I want a clarification on. So I'd give you the North Bend or the casino, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to the casino?
That's big. We need to find money if you're part of that.
Yeah, I bring that up because
no gambling on the weekends.
The Brookdale bus to the casino, which only runs once or twice, whatever is the hot ticket out of the
I wouldn't know.
The Brookdale. I know because I was shopping for somebody.
Well, the other map that's in there, that's just our current network. So it shows Monroe as being part of basically the blob that has door-to-door service in it. So it would be possible for us to pick somebody up at their home. Say they live over by Fralin's or something. We could pick someone up at their door, bring them to Duval, put them on the Valley Shuttle, get them all the way down to North Bend, put them on the Cedar Falls loop, and get them all the way out to Rattlesnake Lake.
So I'd be interested too, do you have any of your historical data from 2012 and previous that shows some of the ridership that you guys had when you were servicing here?
Yeah, we had there was two routes in the area, but they operated from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they were all demand response, so you have to call, you know, 2-3 days in advance,
right.
And, you know, so not as easy, it's not like this, but we were doing 500 to 800 rides a month.
Was it all within this Monroe city limits? Or
No.
I'm more interested in the destinations of those rides. Just trying to address.
We don't have the data. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
Prior to 2012, the service was moderately disorganized. It just was.
No, by my math, my Arlington High School education here, I see we're at $20,000 left. Now that we've been extended to, you said we need to know by May 23rd. I see we have a meeting on a couple of meetings before then, on the 22nd, right before then, and then we prior to that.
15th.
I think we could get some more data for us to consume. I think it's a very worthwhile endeavor to look at, just knowing how we've tried to meet, you know, with the senior center and, you know, what we do there. Councilmember Cutterback brings up some very good points, just making sure that if we're going to go this way, that we have a very, you know, timely, not just, there is some economic development, you know, side of the equation, but then also showing the potential benefit to our residents and citizens, because this would be a $1 bus ticket to go to the outlet malls as well.
We also sell 10 ride cards, and so for human service agencies, like the shelters and the hospitals will buy like one ride cards. So instead of it being $1 to them, it's 85 cents. And then they just give them out to people that need a ride. And so that makes it really easy too. Don Okazaki also mentioned that the gentleman from King County MetroCAD, when fares were brought up, his comment was, well, I don't care if it's donation only. So the Valley Shuttle, on which we do 65 to 120 people a day, we get about 30% of the people who pay on that, and that's considered a $1 suggested donation, because it's the only spine that goes up and down the valley, so people have no other way to get around. $1 a day can be burdensome, you know. It could be like $44 a month. That's a lot of money. So, quite frankly, I don't really care if people pay all that much, but it's whatever we want to set up. We want to set it up so that it's, you know, quasi-subsidized by fares, and we could make it a suggested donation. If it's one more subsidized, then you make it absolutely, it's going to cost a buck. I tell you, if somebody needs a ride somewhere and they get on our bus, we're not going to say you can't ride if you don't have $1.
Anything further?
No, that's it. I look forward to more data. Thank you for coming tonight.
All right. So what I'm understanding then, a couple things. One, confirm the due date for the commitment. Two, confirm the type of commitment. Sounds like there are some entities that might be doing letters of interest versus actual monetary commitments, with the idea that they'd come back with a monetary, like, here's the money a little bit later. Getting the survey data. I'd like to get some feedback from Evergreen Hospital, Providence, the county, et cetera, other entities that have been contacted to see if they're interested. I still would like to see other, you know, skin in the game,
yes,
so to speak,
definitely.
From other entities and get that $35,000 down to, you know, $3,800, somewhere in there, because I expect that whether it's Walmart or Fred Meyer or one of the hospitals or clinics here in town, that they're going to benefit from having people go back and forth up and down the valley. I also would like to understand a little bit more. I used to drive a van pool from Monroe to Redmond City Hall on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a King County route map right now, and I see that there is a bus line from Duval going into Redmond. And while 8 to 5 doesn't really serve commuters, it would be interesting to know what other connections people can make that might take them to Redmond Town Center or, you know, to places of work. Like if you've got a kid that doesn't drive yet or doesn't have a vehicle, what if they've got a job in Redmond or something? Can they take one of these buses out of Monroe down to Duval, catch a King County bus, and then go into Redmond as opposed to taking a longer route? So I think that there's a little bit more information I'd like to understand there. So
when we deal with King County Metro, the agreement that we have with them, since we don't have ORCA card readers on the buses, which provide awesome data that they're, that people are not wild about those, at least not people on the valve. The agreement, though, is that if anybody is going to or from a regular transit connection, that they don't have to pay. Since we don't have the money to pay for a transfer system, which is very expensive. So it was why I was thinking that the timing would be kind of good if it was every hour and a half. And it's because the Valley Shuttle is every 90 minutes. And the Valley Shuttle's timing was set up by King County Metro, since they used to do the route, to catch the 224, 232 out of Duval that goes Duval, Woodville, Redmond.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
So that's why I'm thinking like in every hour and a half or something.
Yeah.
But again, I haven't put just a ton of work into this because it's very very labor intensive to actually set something up with all of the stops and making sure and visiting and all that sort of stuff and getting the timing down perfectly if we're not going to end up doing it.
Right. So it sounds like there's a general interest on the council to explore this farther. It sounds like there's interest in trying to identify other partners, and we will bring this back at a future agenda, and we'll try to allow enough time so that it's not, if we can swing it, not the 22nd, where a decision is required on the 23rd. But we'll the staff will look into that. Maybe that's the only date we can do it. So.
It's like the 15th, just a regular meeting.
Okay, perfect.
That would allow for action.
Okay.
And I will email Brittany, who is the coalition person from HealthLink, and okay, if I sent the survey results to Deborah then?
Yeah, Deborah on staff, or she'll have somebody else on staff. So, yep, she's your main point of contact, and then she'll consolidate the info, or somebody on staff.
And I should know more from Marianna Canfield, but she's in 11 months right now.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming to see me.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for your intro. I love giving people a
thank you.
For the next item on the agenda, discussion item number 2, this is AB 18107, proposed amendments to City Council Rules of Procedure, switch business meetings, study session calendar. Ms. Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. You know, my name is Sam. This was brought up briefly, just the idea of switching from the first and third for regular meetings to second and fourth. So basically, when you went to a business meeting study session format back in February, there was some discussion of how do we know this is right. And so we've been doing this for a couple months now, and we've canceled one first meeting, which then made us only have one business meeting in the month of April, kind of made these business meeting agendas very long and a lot of work for staff. And then we looked forward in the rest of 2018, and we saw we were going to cancel quite a few more first meetings, thus eliminating more business meetings. So we are proposing to go ahead and
switch the schedule, so the second and fourth Tuesdays would become business meetings, and the first and third would become study sessions. Therefore, when we do cancel those first meetings, which we regularly do because of holidays and because of spring break and things like that, we won't miss out on action meetings. So if you are agreed with this, we would go ahead and bring this back next week on May 1st for action, and we would propose starting this in June, so May is kind of already populated, so June seems like a good start. We've already kind of prepped staff, and also the city attorney knows about this, and he's still available to attend on the 2nd and 4th. Please let me know if you have any questions.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
That does make sense.
All right. Does everybody else agree generally that this just makes sense?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and say this just makes sense. So we'll bring this back on May 1st for council's consideration. Will this be on consent or on new?
I
concerns,
you're happy
concerns with this being on consent?
Yeah.
You're able to pull it, of course, if you would like to have a discussion or vote on it separately. Thank you very much, Ms. Atkinson. And we have no further business required this evening. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Second.
Motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen was the second. Councilmember Davis or Gamble? Okay, Councilmember Gamble. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We are adjourned.